Hello, and welcome to Tech Talks in the Silicon Forest, a podcast presented by ProFocus Technology, an award-winning tech staffing and consulting company. On this episode, we are thrilled to have ProFocus Vice President James Lund as our host. James has an extensive background in executive-level roles at both private and nonprofit organizations. His commitment to driving organizational improvement, growth, and creating an exceptional culture has helped ProFocus exceed goals year after year. On this episode, James sits down with Chris Miller to talk about the future of the workplace. Chris is the Chief People Officer at BrandLive, a trailblazing company in Portland, Oregon, that is shaping the future of work through meetings that are more fun, more engaging, and more interactive. This is an episode you won't want to miss. So let's get started.
All right. Hey, Chris, thank you for joining us at Tech Talks in the Silicon Forest. Really happy to have you.
Delighted to be here.
Yeah, I know we've been talking about getting together and chatting for a little while now, and we met several years back when you were the VP of HR at Smarsh, and you were nice enough to join our panelist group of expert panelists at our Tech Careers event, and fortunate to have you sharing incredible information with all the folks that came to that event back when there were a lot more in-person large events. So yes. Anyway, thanks for joining us here.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And I know you've recently stepped into an exciting new role at BrandLive, which we'll hear more about in just a minute, and looking forward to the conversation, especially looking forward to our conversation and about the future of the workplace is what we'll discuss today, and especially how relevant that is given the organization you're at BrandLive, and talk about how the workplace will permanently shift. So exciting things on the horizon for that. And I know you're better at telling your story than me. So please share a little bit about yourself, your background, and about your new exciting role at BrandLive.
Yeah, perfect. So my background, my accent, maybe giving it away, not from the US, but came here about 20 years ago. So my background really kind of came out of the financial services industry in London and ended up getting into an external recruiting role. So a lot of my background stems from external recruiting for big financial services organizations. And then I came to the US about 20 years ago, actually worked for a rather large external recruiting firm up in Seattle, Washington. And really, that's where I got into recruiting for tech companies and ended up recruiting for a big chunk of about a decade in my career. I was then very fortunate to be introduced to a local tech startup. This probably goes to the roots of Silicon Forest here about 14 years ago. I actually joined an organization called Smarsh. And at that point, they were running software for the financial services industry to essentially kind of archive their electronic communication that had recently been passed through federal law. So they went through some huge growth. So I was very fortunate to kind of bleed into leading an HR team and expanded and broadened my role just from recruiting into HR. And I spent 10 wonderful years at Smarsh. I think when I joined, we had about 50 people. And when I joined, I think we were pushing 700 people. And since I've left, they are over 1,000. So continuing to expand.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. So it was a wild ride for me. I think my, had the opportunity to expand out of recruiting and really learn and grow in running a full HR team and built that team over time. So went through venture capital ownership, you know, private equity ownership, worked with various different CEOs and founders, and had a wonderful time there at 10 years. So managed to build out some pretty kind of best in class HR programs. So from there, at the beginning of the pandemic, I didn't know there was a pandemic coming, is my two cents there. But I left technology and left Smarsh after 10 years. The time for me was to step into a new role and continue to grow and develop and learn. So I actually joined Opus Agency, which is now called the Opus Group, which really is a collection of three unique creative agencies. And I went there to work with a mentor of mine, and really kind of continue the trajectory of growth, as my goal was to become a chief people officer. So from that standpoint, the pandemic hit shortly after that, and I had just joined a live events business.
Timing on the on that transition to your career, I did have to comment on that.
Yeah, what a great time to transition. We were fortunate to have some incredibly talented and smart people. So we pivoted pretty fast, really to kind of offer virtual events. We were fortunate enough that a lot of our clients at Opus were, you know, these global technology companies that that helped us through this period of time too, in terms of allowing us to invoice and bill on future projects and so forth. So, so from there, I stepped into the number one HR leadership role pretty quickly, sooner than I had imagined, as my mentor kind of stepped away. So during the pandemic, I really ran the HR functions for those three creative agencies for a couple of years. And then to your earlier point, I had a wonderful opportunity to regroup with some of my old Smosh leaders who had really kind of maneuvered BrandLive into kind of a software event platform and quasi creative agency. So fortunate at the beginning of this year to join BrandLive as their chief people officer. And I am kind of running all of the HR functions at BrandLive, which we'll talk more about. So that's really my career trajectory, where we are today. I've been in Portland for about 16 years, you know, and I think it has a wonderful technology community. I've been fortunate to work with some incredibly talented people, and cool Silicon Virus home.
That's great. That's great. No, thank you for sharing. I love talking about starting at Smosh and really the roots of the Silicon Forest, and really, if there's any thinking back 16 years in Portland and so much growth that Portland has had, right, especially within the tech scene, and I know there's some of that weaved in there already, but what if you could share some over that 16 years, some really helpful career advice that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, no, I love that question. I think more people should ask it. So for me, it's really twofold, right? And I think the expression I've always heard that I've liked, this is not mine by any stretch of the imagination, but I have heard this and I've always liked it. But the future depends on what you do today. And really my career advice for many folks is, you know, sometimes we are overly focused on the outcome and we just want to be the director of the group or in the C-suite. And sometimes you can overlook that the way to do that is to focus on what's in front of you, right? So whatever project's in front of you, kill it, right? Do go above and beyond on that particular project. I've, you know, in the 16 years I've been in kind of HR and, you know, seen people get promoted several times throughout time, it is always the people that are focused on what's in front of them, right? Because that leads into the bigger opportunities. So that is not mine. I heard that from a boss about 15 years ago and I loved it, right? The future depends on what you do today. So I've always loved that.
I do love that. I think that that's really important to remember. I think people get caught up, I believe, in focusing so much on goals and not necessarily on what it takes to get there. And
yeah, you
know, we had our summer summit last week and we talked a little bit about goal and achievement and high performance and what that means. And what came up to is that there's a difference between, you know, you have to have, of course, you have to have goals, but you need to break it down to really what are you doing today that's going to set yourself up for that success later or for whatever that future is.
So yeah.
I really like that.
Absolutely. Huge.
Yeah. So going back to BrandLive, the new exciting role that you've been in, and now you're finally, I don't know, you've been able to dive in long enough to where you maybe are situated and really exciting that now, obviously, with some of the changes we've had and from when we even first started talking about this episode, right? Changes in the market and how much has shifted. But with your role, tell us more about your role. Tell us more about what you're doing. Tell us more about BrandLive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think first and foremost, BrandLive is a super interesting story, right? So I think going back to, you know, BrandLive's in the event tech space, you know, we essentially create high impact webinars, meetings, events, primarily for the enterprise customer, Our platform and services really have evolved over the last couple of years. So you can go back to the beginning of the pandemic, and that's really where you get a sense of where I think, you know, the team, again, I wasn't here, so I'm giving great props to the team here. But, you know, they worked tirelessly on the Biden and Harris fundraiser campaign, which was significant for Biden, obviously, to go through into victory. So some things that the team, I think, really participated in that I think had some kind of bigger purpose and social impact to, you know, more of the traditional kind of Nikes and Adidas that use us for, you know, those apparel organizations that push out their products and services internally as they do new product launches. So I think we're a pretty unique tech company. You know, we are essentially a software platform. So if you think of Teams and Zoom, we essentially kind of have what we call Green Room, which is behind that video platform that can do pretty significant elements of running, you know, these high-end events for these kind of big moments. So for us, we also have what we call Brand Live Studios. So there's also a kind of quasi creative agency within our organization. So they really provide the magic to our virtual events, right? From running the green room, from doing more traditional marketing materials and content for the shows. So we work with clients, you know, like Nintendo, Google, you know, some Nike and Adidas, as I mentioned before, some pretty large organizations. But the bet for us, which I think is an interesting bet for us, is, you know, we really believe that that rich video content is the future of the workplace, and in particular is the future of marketing. So think about kind of what we do on a regular basis. And I don't know what your social media habits are, but if you're on TikTok, if you're on Instagram, you are used to this kind of video content to digest information. So we believe that that is, you know, in brand conscious in companies and environments like the Nikes of the world, that they are now going to invest in kind of video content material, whether that be, you know, all hands meetings, sales kickoffs, you know, fundraising events. These moments, these big kind of one to many events, is really where our software platform and our Brand Live Studios teams kind of come in and help create that magic. So we're headquartered here in Portland. We're probably about 60-40 hybrid. We've got employees across 22 different states across the U.S. We're here, headquartered here in Portland, about 150 total employees, and we have a few folks in Europe as well. So that's really the backdrop of Brand Live. And that really was, honestly, James, you and I talked back in April, right? You know, hey, let's talk about the future of the workplace. And every article you digested in April was around the great resignation, the impact on hybrid workplace. And it's funny because before we started recording, we were like, isn't this funny now? We're on the back end of the great layoff from the technology industry and how that's kind of balanced it out. So I do believe that's an interesting conversation for us. But that's a little bit about Brand Live.
No, thank you for sharing. I think Brand Live is really, you mentioned a little unique. I think it's really unique. I've seen the platform and I think it's, I think it's really exciting and valuable, especially the more remote and the more that, you know, we, as, you know, as an organization in a small business too, I can see a lot of value for small businesses as well. You talked about enterprise is probably your primary or target customer. And I certainly see that, but this is, I think, a really amazing platform for small businesses too, that could add a lot of value and take the boring out of your meetings and look through the, you know, all the different opportunities and how it can help shape the workplace and just bring a lot more excitement. You talked about rich video and shorter videos and easier to digest. We're always thinking of ways that how can we keep our team engaged? How can we keep them excited and connected to the content that we're looking to share, whatever that is.
Well, and in line with that, right? I think what's so exciting for us just as a people team within Brand Live, so just looking internally for a moment, because I don't disagree, while we're focused right now in the enterprise, because those are the brands that are more brand conscious. this. Those are the brands that I think are at the top end of the talent war. They have to retain top people. They have to recruit. So they are forced to look at different ways to communicate with their employees. And I think that is the future of the workplace that we're starting to touch on. But for you know, just as an example, internally, this is interesting for us, right? We're looking at, I'll give you a live example of where we're trying to look at, you know, the future of digesting communication and information is video. So one of the things my team's doing right now is we're taking your old age classic employee handbook that nobody reads, is 48 pages long, you have to sign it every year. We're trying to take that and we're trying to take, you know, key elements of your employee handbook and we're putting it in video format. Right. So you can come in and you can say, well, hey, what is our policy on employee referrals? Boom. You watch a 2-minute video. Right. Yep. What is our process on, you know, time off? Boom. You watch a 3-minute video. So we're even trying to take this notion of video to the nth degree. And we believe organizations are kind of following suit. So that's a really interesting point. Yeah. Video is key.
Yeah. No, that's a great point, too. Especially, it's just so much easier to digest for a lot of people. And you look at the different generations as well, to where, you know, people are going to be able to absorb content or absorb policies or whatever it is much better in different formats versus the old school, you know, looking at, looking at a document and just reading through, like you said, 50 pages versus being able to digest it.
Right. You're trying to find the piece you want in a 48-page document. But extrapolate that out even further. This is why I think for us, that, and you've seen the platform, but, you know, we really are trying to create the Netflix for organizations. So our platform actually looks like your Netflix homepage. So you're going to scroll through tiles. So you would just find a tile that either, that may ultimately be employee handbook, but then you go in and the videos have episodes. So you go straight to the one you want. It's all on your phone. It's exactly how you're doing TikTok and Instagram throughout the day. So this is kind of, you know, I think relevant to our discussion. I know it feels like I'm plugging Brand Live right now, but I am. But relevant to our discussion too, because I think this is the future of the workplace. I think how we communicate and engage our employees is probably at the biggest friction change point that it has been in decades. So huge.
And certainly a plug for Brand Life, but I would also add to just what they're doing, which is unique. And to me, when I see a lot of what you guys are doing, I think of other things too, like how else are things going to shift? As we were looking, just even going back two years ago, March 2020, and now we're, you know, 2.5 years later, you start seeing some of those things and okay, how's this going to branch off into something different, right? So what else is going to, so I think this is a perfect segue into the, I think we already started the topic, which is the future of the workplace. So first question for this is what are some of the biggest ways that you're seeing and how the workplace will permanently shift?
Well, and I think this is like we said earlier, right? I think you take a look back at April and May and you take a look right now, obviously, you know, we have to acknowledge that there's been, you know, CNN ran the article, 30,000 technology workers laid off at the beginning part of the second quarter of the year. So while we're being led to believe that, you know, GDP is the second quarter reduced, is it really a recession? There are still jobs out there. So it's such a convoluted answer to a very convoluted question. But how we're looking at it at BrainLive, and certainly how I'm looking at it through, you know, talking with other professionals, seeing what other organizations are doing, we are having to shift, right? We're you're either in a hybrid, you know, environment, or you're in a remote environment, or you're in an in-office environment, and this is kind of permanently shifted. So I was thinking a lot about this, and I'm going to try and boil it down, hopefully for the audience, to kind of two perspectives, right? One, the employee's perspective, and then maybe secondarily, the employer's perspective, right? So I think if I look through the lens of employees, and I've got a live example to share with you, the key commonality we're seeing is flexibility, right? I think what we are seeing, we're seeing it at BrainLive. I think we're seeing it across many organizations. I think in today's workplace, we have proven that we can work remotely, right? I don't know of an organization that hasn't proven that during the pandemic, that they can manage their business remotely, right? Now, that's nuanced. Some may believe you can do it more effectively remotely than in person. But if that's our truth for a minute, then I think from an employee standpoint, what people want, we're seeing it in recruiting discussions, we're seeing it in retention discussions. You know, my team did stay interviews last week for one team. Flexibility. I can boil it down to one element. So what does that mean, right? So if we unpack flexibility, I think it means, you know, when I come into the office, right? When I work from home, how I'm going to potentially work with others. You know, we're at the point now that whatever your work stream or workflow may be, that flexibility, I think from an employee standpoint, what we're looking at from our organization, from our boss, from our department executive, we're looking for flexibility, right? We're now at a point, and again, we're coming at this from a privileged standpoint for being in the technology industry, and we're not working on the manufacturing floor and have to be in every day to kind of push a widget through. But so we are in a privileged situation, and our workflows and streams are really important. So flexibility, I think, is the key element. And here's an example. I was reading this, I think this may have been last month, but the head of machine learning at Apple left and went back to Google. You may have read this yourself. I think this article did the rounds, but I think the most senior engineering machine learning left Apple and went to Google. And his parting comment to Apple was ultimately flexibility. Right.
Yeah.
He said, I didn't want to be told when to come to the office. Right. So the key reason that I think flexibility is so important is it's easy for me to say, yeah, we're doing a hybrid work environment. Right. We're really flexible. But I want you in the office Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 9 to 5. Is that really flexible, right? So, you know, I'm picking on the head of machine learning at Apple because that's a significant talent loss to your competitor going over to Google. And the parting comment was, hey, look, if you didn't say my team had to be in the office 3 days a week, I'm not sure if I would have gone. The flexibility.
Yeah, and that's where you saw a lot of people leaving as well, just out of the fear of losing flexibility. Mm-hmm. People had so much throughout the beginning of COVID when so many organizations went remote, or at least, you know, and there was just a lot of uncertainty, and we were seeing that, and we made a decision pretty early on for ProFocus to be permanently office optional. So we shared with our team, cause that was a big concern. They wanted to know if that, and we knew that would be a differentiator for us in our industry by having so much flexibility. And of course, flexibility is beyond just, I know we're emphasizing talking about remote, you know, versus hybrid, but flexibility is so far beyond that too, right? Is it could depend on meetings, it could depend on when you need to accomplish some of your work or when you need to do some of your work. There's so much involved, right? It goes to the entire organization's culture, and the ones that are really going to be rigid, even when they can be office optional or when they can be remote, but then they choose not to. And then you probably see a lot of inflexibility in other areas throughout the organization.
Yeah. Well, and so totally, I think that is the important element for most growth organizations to try and get that balance of flexibility right. You know, the example I always share, you know, we have, you know, I've seen multiple examples, but in the middle of the day, if you need to go get a kid from school or you need to go to an appointment, you want the flexibility to do it. Now, you might come back later. And I think this is my other side. This is probably a good segue into, you know, it would be unfair to say, hey, look, organizations, you need to focus on flexibility and you need to offer this unique, flexible approach. For me, it goes both ways. And I think if you put yourself in the shoes of an organization or as an employer, I think it's flexibility and accountability, right? So this is what I say to people who want to look for other jobs right now. And, you know, an organization needs to hold people accountable. So it's one thing saying, hey, look, you have the flexibility, right? Maybe ProFocus is a good example, is, hey, office optional. Right. What we're ultimately doing is you run your workflow, you get it done how you best see fit. And I think for the organization is the caveat is as long as we get the results. Right.
Yeah.
We've still got to be result oriented. And I think that's where I would say as an organization, that's what we're looking at is we have to hold our teams and individuals accountable. Right. Are we getting the work done? Are we still moving the needle forward? I think they have to be together for it to work, you know, for it to work effectively.
Yeah. And I agree. And that's why I think you saw so many executives And a lot of people previously before COVID hesitant to embrace that flexibility and embrace remote or hybrid because they thought they wouldn't lead to the results. Then all of a sudden, the workforce proved it, that you can still be productive and efficient and get the results while maintaining flexibility and working from home. And it's interesting to see, we did a tech trend survey a little while back and of just Portland leaders, just Portland managers, which is consistent with what executives say across the organization. But a lot of them, they really changed their mind on that flexibility. That's why you see so many more organizations embracing remote. And I think I've seen a larger shift from my perspective than I was expecting to this requiring hybrid versus, you know, maybe encouraging some in the office. Mm-hmm. I think that has been, at least for me, a little surprise to have some people that really require so much of that, depending on the role. Like you said, of course, we understand the role in the organization is going to be different.
Yeah. Well, and I think accountability for me, it's like that there's probably a good few examples now where I think this now bleeds into software. So because I'm a remote leader, how do I make sure that my team's accountable for results, right? So if, again, and I recognize I've had some interesting conversation with folks. For a lot of people that are in leadership roles that have worked, you know, their tails off for 20 years to get into a leadership role, and they may be in, you know, the C-suite themselves. Well, how they got there probably was primarily being in the office Monday to Friday, right? That this is how we did it. So I also want to recognize it is a philosophical shift for somebody who maybe, I think we all revert to what we've been successful with. So I totally understand that there's still this demand from, you know, certain executives that we want to get people back in the office because we just still believe that that's a better way. Maybe we can get better results for it. So I think for me on accountability, it's how are you then supporting your leaders, right? What software tools are you using? So now for us, it is about dashboards, manager reporting, right? So a lot of this, and for me, and I think BrainLive, we hate creating work for work's sake, right? Who likes doing the Friday management meeting, you know, the Friday management report for 4 hours, right? Mm-hmm. To put a report through to show progress. So for us, we're trying to look at ways and software platforms. Trello is one we use from a project management standpoint and be more transparent with it. So we know where we are and people can see that. So even though we're remote or we're hybrid, again, notion of accountability and results, we're showing that. So I think what you do and the tools you use to be accountable is pretty important too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Anything else from the employer's perspective there?
I tried to boil it down and simplify because I like this notion of kind of flexibility and accountability because it kind of looked both ways. But I think, you know, you'd asked me this question before. I think it's also we need to understand what programs we have in place to make sure the other element from an employer standpoint is what cultural dynamics are we losing? What connective tissue are we losing? So, you know, we did some wellness surveys when I was at Opus. We've done some here at BrainLive. I think it's fair to say that, you know, if you are working remotely or hybrid, you do want connective tissue. Right. You don't want to stay in your home office every single day. So I do think, again, from an employer standpoint, yes, it's great to get accountability, but we also need to balance out how our teams and individuals are connecting. So, you know, there's reasons. I think, you know, you shared that ProFocus have done a leadership summit and been offsite together. There's a reason we do these in person because it is far more effective to do some of these. But I think what I'm seeing from most organizations, I was reading an interesting Forbes article over the weekend. Some organizations now are reducing their commercial footprint, right? Reducing their commercial real estate footprint because more people are working remote and hybrid. And they're taking some of those savings and they're saying, hey, we're going to do a fun quarterly event and we're going to bring everyone together on a quarterly basis. And we're going to do some team updates. We'll do an all hands update, but then we go have fun for a day. Right. Yeah. So I definitely don't want to overemphasize that my belief system is, you know, hey, we can do this on a screen all the time. I do think it's a balance. And I think smart organizations are trying to find the balance. And that's why I thought it was interesting, these companies that are doing these quarterly events of bringing people together quarterly. And that's where you can do cross-functional teams, especially in software, right? You've got engineering teams, product teams, PMO teams. You've got sales enablement, sales teams that really need the level of collaboration. So I think for me, I guess that the bottom, the net of this is, I don't think there's a silver bullet. Depends on your business, depends on your team, depends on maybe the experience of your team, right? Another thing we found at Opus really interesting in the beginning of the pandemic is folks earlier in their career demand and want more interaction because you're still learning your trade. Right. You don't know all the answers. So you want to be around someone who can kind of coach and develop. So I know we love silver bullets. I think it's just, it really depends on what your business is, experience levels, and kind of how your work streams happen.
But I think you hit it right on the mark, though. I think even though it's not exactly a silver bullet, but I think overwhelmingly you're seeing organizations shrink their footprint. I mean, I think I saw, maybe it was the same what you saw, but Sherm, I think, had done a significant, it was about 70%, I think, of companies were shrinking their real estate footprint in order to, you know, they were going to have some more hoteling, but they were putting that budget back into some of these in-person and also virtual events as well. So they're just putting that money back into their team, back into their culture in a variety of different ways and whatever works for those organizations.
Yeah. And I think, James, that's the key for me. It's not a cost cutting exercise. It's not, you know, we're not improving EBITDA by reducing our real estate footprint. We're reinvesting in how we believe people need to connect, because that's still tied to overall employee retention, right? So if I put my HR hat back on, right, you know, in order to retain top talent over time, yes, the data suggests that we need to make sure that there is a connective tissue, right? We talk about employee engagement. We do lots of programming around employee engagement. So there has to be this connective tissue over time. But you also raised a good point, which I didn't mention, is yes, I've seen lots of good organizations do some things virtually, right? Doesn't have to be always in person. So great point.
Yeah, we've had some really engaging and, I mean, really quite entertaining events virtually. And we've just tried to find different ways to be creative with it, sometimes with smaller groups and sometimes with all company. And you're just seeing more and more of that. I do think that that's something that's permanently shifting with the new workplace.
And, yeah, absolutely.
You touched on something that I want to ask about and dive deeper into, which is around folks wanting to come into the office more, especially younger or people who are earlier in their career, at least in whatever industry they're in. They want to be seen more. They want to learn from their peers. You know, that's something that I find interesting too. And how do you balance that when you have more remote, you have more office optional, you have the most senior people that don't want to go into the office nearly as much. And then also, which touches, I think, into bias. So I'm throwing a lot at you here, and then I'm just gonna unload and then let you just pick up the pieces. But with, you know, the more hybrid or the more remote, thinking of bias in favor of, you know, for the people that are in the office, whether it's people looking to advance, looking to learn more, or, you know, how this could disproportionately hurt women permanently, long term, right? Who may be more working from home. At least the data suggests that. So
absolutely.
Help me unpack that, Chris.
Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the several softballs coming over here. But no, I mean, all of these I think are really big. So maybe let's just unpack and acknowledge that. I think yes, the old age classic of how you got forward was to be in the office more, right? If you're in the office more, you're going to be seen by others. You're going to be able to kind of climb the ladder. So I think that is ultimately what we're rubbing up against in a big way, right? And I can probably speak more to the Opus and Brand Live landscape that I've been involved in, you know, since the pandemic, more so than just best practices. But what I've seen and what I think is important. So one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, at Opus and now at BrandLive, a lot of our learning and development opportunities are being offered virtually. Right now, of course, this fits the BrandLive software application really well because we can run training in our own application and do it very well. But that's one way that we're trying to combat that, to say, hey, look, we recognize that there are some advantages to being in an HQ, right? Always has been, probably always will be to some degree. But I think what we're trying to do, especially from a people team perspective, is just to narrow that chasm. Right. It shouldn't be so far. So just again, tactically, there are a few things that we're doing. So one is learning and development. So all of our programs are virtual. So it doesn't matter if you're in head office, you're going to get access to the same level of training programs. That also extends into our leadership programs. So you are going to get access to the same leadership development programs, whether you're remote, whether you're on site. I think that's an important tactical kind of element that you can do. But yeah, location bias is hard, right? So the other thing that we're trying to do is both Opus and at BrandLive kind of been able to kind of reimagine the performance management cycle. So we are now kind of really bleeding into, you know, less formal, more frequent performance review cycles and performance check-ins, as we often call them nowadays, because that is intended to provide more frequent feedback. So if somebody is trying to move and has ambitions to be the next engineering manager and they want to get into that role, but they're based in Scottsdale, Arizona, and you know the head office is in New York, well, if you can provide that more frequent feedback, that there's an element, hopefully, that you can identify what those gaps are to be able to step up and take that role. So, you know, I think those are the two that comes to mind that I've seen that have been somewhat successful, right? The data's still too early to suggest if that really is going to move the needle. But, you know, feedback is another one that I think is really tied to that. I think people, you know, whether it's coming out of a pandemic or not, or whether it's just a desire to grow and learn, you know, providing feedback in my world still seems to be an art form. So people want feedback, right? They want feedback to develop it. And, you know, we have all of our, you know, all of our idiosyncrasies come into play when we're leaders about, you know, do we provide direct feedback? Do I try and coach? So I think feedback and coaching is another skill set that I've seen, you know, organizations pay a lot of attention to try and break some of those barriers down by giving folks more frequent feedback.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you have this in place for more frequent check-ins. Do you have a specific cadence across the organization, or does it vary by different teams? And what does that cadence look like?
Yeah, well, I think in my research, most SaaS organizations have moved to kind of a more quarterly check-in review process, right? Again, this notion of more frequent. You know, both at Opus and at BrandLive, we're moving from the dreaded annual review that, you know, you probably can't look back over a year and objectively give someone feedback. It's too long of a period of time, right?
Yeah, in and of itself.
So both, you know, at BrandLive where we are at the moment is we've kind of done this twice a year. So we're just kind of getting our sea legs. And we've done a lot of training actually this week on providing our managers just kind of the framework and how to perform those conversations, right? The element is really around trying to have a meaningful conversation around performance, which is, you know, your ability to reinforce positive behaviors and outcomes, you know, your ability as a leader to maybe provide coaching opportunities to improve that person's performance, and, right, just as important, to have career discussions, right? What is that next move? Where do you want to go next? I find, you know, in tech in particular, we're running so fast. So a lot of our one-on-ones, a lot of our meetings tend to be so tactical. It's about what needs to get done. So that's the frequency we have right now. I think the general research I've seen in tech organizations is quarterly. Again, just to get that, I know a couple of organizations that do it monthly, right? Very informal, but just check-in points. And that's that, I would argue, is a high performance culture if you're doing it monthly, because it gets part of the rhythm, right?
Yeah, we do them monthly, and we have quarterlies that that where we focus really more on like an individual development plan, IDP or PDP,
yeah,
and partnering with people, especially like you talked about people that have ambitions to be the next engineering manager or whatever their goals are within the organization, or we talk with them and we partner with them on getting there. And so that's a lot of what we focus on a quarterly basis is helping them achieve that, as well as 360 for us. But you're seeing a lot more organizations, like you said, doing it more frequently, like quarterly, monthly. Nobody likes it annual. So and I know some large organizations are still doing that way. It's just a big change to make. And it requires a lot more, I think, good leadership. It puts a lot of pressure on the leaders out there. And of course the organization too. It's just a big change. Yeah.
It is. And I think you're right. It's why we focus a lot of our efforts on leadership training around performance management, because that's really, to your point, where a lot of the kind of the work stream and workflow does kind of fall to a manager. So as an example, right, the engineering manager is a good example. Well, depending on what organization you're coming from, lots of tech companies run a matrix engineering organization. So your manager may not necessarily see your day-to-day work, right? You may be flowing up through a matrix organization. So can be hard to run some of these processes, because you don't know or don't have the ability to coach and provide some coaching opportunities. So one of the things we encourage folks to do during review cycles is reach out to peers, reach out to clients, like gather some feedback for someone, right? But yes, it is time consuming. So helping leaders do that is definitely the key. We've put a lot of work this week into creating a structure and a process so it can be scalable for a leader. It's very daunting if you have 11 direct reports, right, that you've got to do this for. So absolutely.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as we talk about, we already talked about flexibility and covering some of this, you know, remote and hybrid one thing, and as well as communication, talking about we're all talking about employees in our workforce, and really the age of employees is here. And I know you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I think we're still at about one, for at least for technology unemployment, I think we're still about 1.5%, hovering around 1.5%, which is, you know, is just incredible. And it's been like this for a long time. So I'm curious, knowing that it's the age of the employee, especially the tech employee, how do you see workplace trends continuing to shift? So maybe not permanent shifts, but how do you see workplace trends, at least now, continuing to shift in favor of employees?
Well, I think to that degree, and I know we're off the back of lots of tech companies, you know, making some readjustments with their overall workforce, but there are also many jobs still out there in tech. So to your point, the unemployment number is still pretty low from that standpoint. So yeah, I don't think the recent events change the people team strategy is around attracting and retaining top talent. That won't change. So I think, you know, for us at BrandLive, I think we're at a moment where the trend that I think that we're seeing is we really need to invest in developing our people. So that is something that, you know, we're looking at, you know, significant learning and development programs. We're looking at sending folks on conferences. We want to make sure people are getting kind of the on-the-job training that is required. So I think it's twofold, right? It's, you know, as you look under that umbrella of retention, it, for me, and from what I'm seeing, is, you know, people want to see growth. People want to see how they can develop their skills, right? However long they stay in your organization, I think at any given point, whenever you come out of an organization, I think you should be better than when you joined it, right? And if that's the case, I think you're in a pretty good spot. So, you know, I know in tech, we talk a lot about kind of employee engagement. We talk a lot about how do we engage our workforce and our employees. And that's a piece of it too, right? So I would say, you know, one of the elements I've seen at BrandLive be really successful is there's a service called Boone Mental Health. I'd never worked with Boone. This is going to be a shameless plug for Boone here. If anyone listens and works for them, they're going to be like, this is great. But I've never worked with them, but they're a software application that offer you know, mental health and coaching, you know, essentially services to your employees. So, you know, Brand Live at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, kind of onboarded with Boon. And like many employee assistance programs, in if you don't know the data, the utilization of employee assistance programs, EAPs, are really low.
It's insanely low.
It's seemingly low. So what fascinated me at Brand Live when I looked at the data is the utilization rate for Boon is north of 60%. It is insanity. And what I was looking at it and looking at the data and even just some anecdotal discussions of how people are interacting with Boon is, you know, there are coaching opportunities, there are therapists, there are mental health elements that you can tap into. So while I say, look, it's about developing your people and engaging them, I still believe that's the core of what your people team should be focused on and should be your executive strategy too. But some of these ancillary benefits, I think, are about as useful as they can be today, because if you do have a workforce that's primarily remote or primarily hybrid, then they are potentially missing some of the interactions, right? How do they manage their stress and how do they manage their day-to-day kind of stresses in life? So Boon Mental Health has been a service I've seen that has had huge impact, and the utilization rate was just something that stood out to me. So there's a couple of things I take from that is, one, well done, Boon. You have a great service. So let's take our hats off to Boon. But, let's give them their credit where credit's
due. Good job.
But yeah, good job, Boon. But secondarily, I think what I see from the utilization is I see that there is an appetite for people to want to get help. Right. Yeah. And I think sometimes in our society, we can look at help as a negative, right? Somebody needs a therapist. Somebody needs help. This is, you know, more of a negative than a positive. And I think what we're doing around mental health is kind of taking that, you know, stigma away from it to say, no, we all need mental health. So whatever that is, I mean, we've done a yoga session, right, on our platform during the middle of the day. We did an on-site yoga session too. We're doing a run here next month. So I can't stress enough that I think that the wellness approach to your employee strategy cannot be overlooked in this modern workplace too. People want to be able to, you know, for us, it's about employee experiences. And I know a lot of tech companies have employee experience groups, right? They focus on what do we do for our employees? They primarily, we've been told this over data, millennials and Gen Z will favor an experience over something else, right? So I think we're certainly seeing that. And I think that has to be factored in into some of those kind of, you know, futuristic workplace events that you need to have.
That's great. That's great. And I mean, I'm going to give just a shameless shout out to our mission, because what you just said actually is consistent with our mission as an organization, which is to create exceptional experiences for every one of our candidates, clients, and team members. And that's, I appreciate you saying that, because as we as we think about this, and so much of what we've talked about is you know, about experiences. And what I think of what has shifted in the last 2.5 years in a major way is everything we're talking about here is just increased awareness. Like, you talk about wellness, mental health, you talk about like that measurement of performance, having dashboards, being aware of employee engagement and partnering on someone's development. All of that is I think shifted the employer to focus so much and increase their awareness of everything, of how their team is doing, of where they're going, and partnering with them and really listening to their team. And when I think of it as the age of the employee, I constantly think about listening to our team, listening to our organization. What is it that they need and want, and just being more aware.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I love that that's a mission for your organization, right? I've had the privilege to work with you guys over the years, and I think that is important. And tied to that, I think one of the things I didn't mention earlier to that question, but I think fits nicely to that is, you know, if anyone has listened to or gone through Simon Sinek's Start With Why, I think is very much a framework around what the future of the workplace is going to look like. So what I come across on a regular basis is, I think in our probably more modernized workforce and workplace, we do want to understand the why, right? So whether that be business decisions, whether that be revenue decisions, whether that be investment decisions, it is going to be important. I think there is this consensus to, I want to understand the why. So that's something actually we're trying to kind of get through our leadership training. I know there's actually a really good training program you can go through on it too. But that, as you said, I think that's really important that people want to understand why. I don't just want to be told that this is what we have to do. And that brings me to the second point, that a lot of what I think organizations, leaders in particular, is the notion of active listening, because that is tied to start with the why, right? So, hey, look, this here's why we're doing it, but we do have to listen. People are going to have opinions. People may have a different opinion. Doesn't mean that we have to sit and talk to every group every time we make a decision, but for big decisions, I would advise, I've seen organizations do kind of, you know, town halls, ask leadership sessions. I do think there's value to being able to give folks an opportunity to kind of share their feedback. And you as an organization or a leadership team, to have that active listening piece is important too. So just to tag those two on. To your point as well.
No, I appreciate that. And I know we're coming up on time here. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share with me and to chat. And there's so much more that you just even said I could keep going and just unpack. And I'd love to dive into leadership development programs and everything. Maybe I'll pick your brain separately from this on that. But thank you so much for your time and joining us. And I'm assuming if anybody has any if anybody wants to connect with you or candidates interested in working at Brad and Live or prospective customers, probably connect with you on LinkedIn. Chris Miller, you can find him, Brad Live, or you can go to Brad Live website. Any other recommendations on how to connect with you?
Absolutely. I'm happy to throw my email address out too, so folks can email me. That's sometimes a quicker way too. But yeah, questions, concerns, interest in Brad Live, would love to continue the conversation. So happy to do that. Absolutely.
Chris, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, James. Take care.
All right, you too.
Thank you for listening to Tech Talks in the Silicon Forest. If you enjoyed the discussion, please subscribe to our channel, leave us a review, and tell your friends to listen. We'll see you next month.